I'm Mike Sweeney. This is the Simplified Body Podcast. Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of the Simplified Body Podcast. I am Mike Sweeney, registered dietitian, and I'm well aware that this is the first podcast in a little while. Actually, I've been overwhelmingly busy with my business and life and just focusing on different things. So I'm super pumped actually to be back with another episode for you. And this one will actually be a little bit longer than the previous episodes. I've always tried to keep these within a sort of 10 to 15 minute time frame, but this one will be a little bit longer because it's a little bit more in depth. And basically the situation is I wrote a blog quite a few weeks back now on the topic of macronutrient ratios and fat loss, and actually that went wild on social media, so I thought that warranted making an audio version and just to kind of summarize it and actually just tease out a few more of the details. So if you are listening to this and you are a personal trainer, then you may or may not be, some of this may or may not be new for you. And even if you're not a personal trainer, you're just trying to figure out how to get lean for yourself, again, some of this may or may not be new for you, but hopefully I'll be providing a fresh perspective, which seemed to be the case all over social media. So obviously you guys know that, like, getting lean in and of itself, even without worrying about all of this extra stuff, is super hard. I know for me in the past, like, I've been one of those guys that, you know, I was, as a kid, I was overweight, and then I was lean, and then I was overweight again, and then I competed in bodybuilding at 4% body fat, and then I got obese again, and then I got lean again, and then I got fat again, and so I've been on both sides of the spectrum. And so when I say, like, getting lean is just flat out hard, like, I know that from first-hand experience. You know, you've got to think about things like, you know, prepping your meals, making it to your training sessions, you know, you feeling motivated, you got somebody to train with, are you going to train on your own, what kind of training are you going to do, etc., etc. I mean, so, and that's all without kind of worrying about this whole thing of, like, you know, Joe Blow Guru says that, you know, you need to hit this certain macronutrient ratio to be able to lose fat at the optimal rate or whatever the case is. And that's kind of like, you know, I'm saying that a bit tongue in cheek, but that's kind of like the vibe in the nutrition industry and the weight loss industry and the fitness industry even over the last, I would say probably 10 to 15 years, is just looking at macronutrient ratios and what's optimal, what's going to get us the best fat loss. And people have their different, depending on what books you've read, you know, I've got a bunch of books on my bookshelf. So depending on what books you've read, you get different recommendations for different macronutrients and all seemingly have references and science to back all of that up. But what I'm going to have you consider right now, I'm not saying any of that's wrong, but what I'm going to have you consider right now is the fact that macronutrient ratios are actually completely irrelevant for fat loss. Completely irrelevant. Now you might be thinking, well, you know, how can you say that when there's so many books out there, so many smart people with all of their references saying this, that, you know, low carbs best, you know, 30-30-30 is best, zone diet, paleo diet. How can you say that it's completely irrelevant? And the way I can say that is actually because I think I just look at the data differently to most people. Like I said, most of the industry is just looking at all of this research and trying to look for what's optimal all of the time. And the thing I've come to realize in my own life and over the last 10 years of working with clients is if you are constantly chasing optimal, like, optimal is tiring, because to do things optimally, like, that just makes things hard. Now, I've worked with elite athletes, like Olympic level athletes and all, you know, in all different disciplines as well. And if you're at that level, chasing optimal makes sense. I was just speaking to a European champion swimmer just literally on Sunday, 2 days ago now. And, you know, he's right at the top of his game. So for him, all of those 1, 2, 3% marginal gains make a massive, massive difference. But for people like you or I, for you as a trainer or the people that you're training, or for people like me, just, you know, just trying to lead a leaner lifestyle, or if you're trying to figure out your own fat loss, just trying to get leaner, you don't need to worry about being optimal all the time. Because, like I said, those optimal things are super hard, and they do get tiring, and you've got to have massive, massive motivation to be able to make that work, especially over the long term. And you know, by motivation, I just mean big reasons. So that European champion swimmer I was talking to just the other day, he's got loads of reasons, right? He wants to win. He's at the top of, he's one of the top athletes in his discipline, which is swimming. And he wants to be even better. He wants to beat the best. So those are his reasons. You or I probably don't have reasons like that. So let's get into it then, because, you know, what do I mean when I look at the data differently? Well, most supposed gurus and most, you know, supposed experts, when they say, you know, low carb leads to more fat loss or faster fat loss, or this macronutrient ratio leads to better fat loss, whatever. What most people are doing is they're looking at randomized controlled trials. And this is kind of like, if you've had no training in science, if you've had no experience in developing research trials, if you've had no training in critically analyzing science, in other words, if you're just kind of like a PubMed warrior, there's nothing wrong with that. But you kind of learn that randomized controlled trials are the best kind of science there is. It's kind of like referred to as the gold standard. And that's kind of true, but kind of not true. It is a really, really high standard of research. You know, they try to control everything. They can try to control placebos, etc. But when it comes to diet studies, how randomized controlled trials typically work is, let's say if you or I were to sign up to a randomized controlled trial today to look at a diet, we would maybe go up to Loughborough University, which is my local university, and we would enroll in the study, maybe spend the day there, and they would tell us everything that we need to do about the diet, send us away with maybe food, maybe recommendations, maybe a training plan, and they take a bunch of measurements, body fat, weight, etc. But they would basically, when they've got all their data, they send us home for the next 8 weeks. Then at the end of the 8 weeks, we go back. They say, did you follow the diet? We go, yes. They take all of their measurements again. And then they write up the research paper. Obviously, there's a lot more to it like that. I'm just trying to give you the overview. So what I'm trying to point out here, though, is in that situation, which is most situations without diet-related RCTs, is let's say if I've stuck to my diet 100% and you stuck to the diet only 50% of the time. We both go back. We say, yeah, like we stuck to the diet. You've lost less weight and you were on a different diet, and I've lost more weight and I was on a different diet to you. So the researchers would determine that my diet was better because I lost more weight. But in that situation, what's not being taken into account is maybe you went home and for 4 weeks, maybe you were stressed out, you were busy, the kids, and you were up late and you're busy with clients and work and all of this stuff. And so life just got in the way and just kind of made it hard to stick to the diet. You only did it for 50% of the time, and maybe that was why the diet led to less weight loss, not because of the macronutrients. And again, this is a dead basic example, but just kind of highlights some of the potential sort of biases and errors that we see with randomized controlled trials. And to me, it's a bit like, you know, looking at just RCTs when there's a whole other field of research, which we'll go into next, is a bit like, you know, you get your bills through the door every month and you look at half of them. You pay those half and then you just do that for the next 6 months. And then when you're in court and the judge is asking you, you know, why you've only paid half of your bills, you just say, well, I didn't know about the others. Right? Like, to me, this is how it seems when you only look at RCTs, because we also have, we have epidemiology, which in my opinion is massively useful for the purposes that we're talking about. But we also have metabolic ward research, which you may or may not know what that is. I'll explain in just a second. But metabolic ward research is even more tightly controlled than randomized controlled trials. So if you've got two trials, one of them's a metabolic ward research, one of them's an RCT, they're both useful, but the metabolic ward research will outweigh the RCT. And the reason for that is because basically a metabolic ward trial is, instead of giving us everything we need, taking all the measurements and then sending us on our way for 8 or 12 weeks, what they do is they lock you in a hospital ward type environment for the entire time. And that might only be for a week, 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks at most. They don't tend to be much longer than that for obvious reasons to do with ethics. But everything is tightly controlled. So they control when you go to sleep. They control how much food you eat. They control what type of food you eat, how much exercise you're doing. They control everything about your entire day for like a week, 2 or 3 weeks. And at the same time, they're taking all their measurements. So they're taking body weight, body fat, respiratory quotient, and that's just looking at like what type of fuel are you burning? Are you oxidizing fat? Are you oxidizing proteins or carbohydrates, etc.? And all of that's going on at the same time. So it's a lot more tightly controlled. And when we look at this type of research, we see a different picture. And by a different picture, I mean, when you just look at RCT research or randomized controlled trials, what you see is that, yes, low carb diets tend to lead to more weight loss and over a quicker period of time. Now, that's probably a lot more to do with adherence for all the reasons we're going to go into in a second. But when we look at metabolic ward research, which is more tightly controlled, we actually don't see a difference between low carb or low fat or high carb, high fat, vegetarian, low protein, high protein, etc. We don't really see much difference at all when it's all objectively controlled. Now, that's not to say that low carb isn't useful, ketogenic's not useful. It's not to say these things aren't useful, because obviously if you eat less carbs, you eat more protein, the satiety factor kicks in, you're not as hungry, maybe you don't snack as much, maybe it's a little bit easier for you to stick to. Like, I'm not saying it's not useful for all of those reasons at all. I'm just saying that there's no need to run around telling your clients you must eat 30% of your daily calories as protein, or you must eat 30% of your calories as carbohydrates, otherwise this, that, or the other is going to happen, because it definitely won't. So just going into some of this metabolic ward research then, and there's actually loads of this, and it's been going on for a long time, which is why it surprises me that, you know, people, especially some really big names, some well-known names, still come out with books that say you must eat, you know, 35% of your calories as this, 20% of your calories as that, like, which is definitely not the case. So some of this metabolic ward research goes right back to like the late 80s, early 90s. So I've just got one here in front of me from 1996, Golay and Co. And they locked 43 obese adults in a hospital ward, and they fed them actually a low carb, high fat diet. And then they compared that against a higher carb, lower fat diet. Now, you would expect that if carbs actually made you fat, like some of the fitness industry actually believes, or that carbs make it hard to lose body fat, then the guys on the higher carb, lower fat diet in this metabolic ward research, they should have found it hard to lose body fat. But actually, they found the complete opposite. And to quote the study, what they actually said was that they noticed significant decreases in body fat and waist-to-hip ratio circumference in all diet groups, and the changes did not vary as a function of diet composition. So in other words, the results didn't change, whether they were low carb, low protein, high protein, low fat, high fat. The results didn't change when they controlled for caloric intake. Now, that's not to say that if these people were out in a free living type situation dealing with life, that maybe one diet or the other might have been a bit easier to stick to. But this objectifies it as much as possible and shows that's okay. Regardless of your macronutrient ratio, you will lose body fat if your total calories are controlled for. And that's not the only one. So you might have heard of the Kevin Hall research paper that came out in 2015, made a big splash in the fitness industry and on the tinternet. Just for the purposes of, again, they compared low carb to low fat in a metabolic ward type of setting. They took less people, about 19 obese people in this ward. And what they actually found, and what they actually stated in this paper, and this is what everybody sort of ran with, the results of the paper, was that the low-fat group actually lost a bit more body fat than the low-carb group, which surprised everybody, and that's kind of, the internet went mad for that conclusion. So people were saying, look, low-fat was better. The low-carb community was saying, no, that's rubbish. And again, everybody's still kind of arguing over the macronutrient ratios. But for me, I'm looking at this data going, okay, the low-fat group lost body fat and a bit more. The low-carb group also lost body fat. So what that tells me, again, is that regardless of your macronutrient ratios, you will lose body fat if your calories are controlled for. Now, what they also did in this research study was they used a complicated mathematical model to try and project forward the results of the data. And again, they found that the low fat came out a bit better. But again, they just found that both diets lead to lead to body fat loss or weight loss, however you want to frame that. And that's how I look at the data. And like I said, there's loads of other metabolic ward research papers out there that show exactly the same thing, and they have done for the last 10 or 15 years. Now, if you're wondering about ketogenic diets, you know, there's this idea that's around on the internet and the fitness industry that ketogenic diets ramp up fat burning and therefore you're going to lose more body fat. That's complete bullshit, to put it bluntly. And I've got a research paper in front of me by Johnson et al. From the Arizona State University. They compared ketogenic diets to like just normal diets, and again, they found that everybody lost body fat. Now, the reason why ketogenic diets don't sort of ramp up fat burning is really because, like, when you reduce your carbohydrate intake, fat oxidation goes up. And all fat oxidation is just the burning, if you like, that's a bad word, but just the oxidization or the utilization or the burning of fat, which makes sense. You're not eating any carbohydrates now. You're eating probably not that much protein to be ketogenic, so you have to burn fat. That doesn't necessarily that mean you are losing fat. You're just turning over fat. You burn a bit of fat, then you eat a bit of fat. You burn a bit of fat, you eat a bit of fat. And you just stay in that place until you start to reduce your calories. And then you reduce your calories, and then your body fat levels come down and come down and come down, just as they would with any other diet. Literally exactly the same. I've done a ketogenic diet in the past for satiety reasons, really good. For social reasons, it sucks. Really hard to go out and eat on a ketogenic diet. Did I get leaner? Yes. Did I get stronger? Not really. Training kind of sucked because your ability to perform repeated bouts of high intensity training become extremely limited for obvious reasons, because that kind of training requires massive amounts of glycogen or, you know, some level of carbohydrate intake. So that makes physiological sense. So this brings me to my point that I kind of mentioned right at the beginning, full circle. And hopefully you can see the reasoning here is that getting lean, getting yourself lean or getting your clients lean, always has been and always will be about total energy balance. Now, like I said, different diets will work better for different types of people, different clients, different things in their lives going on, different stresses, distractions, etc. But this just gives you the freedom, actually, to, for you as a coach, as a trainer, to not be stuck in one method of thinking and be really rigid with your prescriptions. Now you can start to prescribe, you know, the diets that are going to work best for your clients. And even for your clients, this just frees everything up. They don't have to worry about low fat this, low carb that, low protein, vegetarian, whatever the crap's going on. They just need to figure out, okay, how can I control my overall food intake? And then obviously if they've got body composition goals at the end of that, probably want to keep their protein on the moderate to higher end of the scale. So the other reason actually that I wanted to mention, just really briefly about, like in the original blog article that kind of talked about this idea that tracking your macronutrients is actually making getting lean hard or making weight loss for your clients hard. And the reason for that, and for all, like, you just heard me talk about all of this stuff. So imagine you're just thinking about all of that stuff every single day. Which some of you do. So trainers will be doing, if it fits your macros, tracking on MyFitnessPal, doing all of this stuff. And if you think about it, you're just thinking about your food all of the time. You're just constantly scanning stuff, entering stuff. Is this hitting my macros? Is this hitting my calories? Have I got the right, you know, quantity of carbohydrates, the right quantity of fats? Like constant thinking about your food intake and what it is, etc. And the difficulty of that, like if you're trying to push that kind of approach onto your clients, who probably aren't as motivated as you, you know, they're not living the fitness industry lifestyle, that's just going to make things way, way harder for them, because the reality is there is such a thing as decision fatigue. And all of this means is that basically the more conscious decisions you make in a day, the faster you run out of willpower. Now, I hate the word willpower because all it essentially means is that first thing in the morning, your prefrontal cortex is nice and fresh, so you can make all these awesome decisions like, I'm not going to eat cookies because I want to be lean next month. As the day goes on, you get more and more tired. Your prefrontal cortex, which is just the front part of your brain, is less and less able to make those kind of decisions. So we end up in this instant gratification mode of, I don't feel great, I'm going to eat some fucking cookies. And that's all really willpower is. And again, psychology researchers have demonstrated that the more conscious decisions you have to make in a day, the faster you run out of that willpower, or the faster your brain gets tired and your decisions become worse and worse and worse and worse over time. And I did actually pull out one research paper on this area where they looked at, they went into a court environment in America, and they looked at the decisions that judges were making about, you know, convicted and prisoners and stuff. And what they found is when the judges were fresh, rested, and like first thing in the morning, the judges were a lot more lenient and they were making a lot more reasonable decisions or judgments. So, you know, if somebody's come in and they've like robbed their local store or something, the judge was a lot more likely to look at their situation and be like, okay, well, why did you rob the store? Well, you needed money. Okay, I can see you were desperate. That's not great. What we'll do is maybe, you know, 6 months of community service. We'll give you some rehab and, you know, try to just be reasonable about the whole situation. Whereas this research paper, what they found is when the judges became tired, which was more towards lunchtime or more towards the end of the day, the more tired they were just made a lot harsher decisions. So in that same situation, the guy would come in having robbed the local store and the judge would be like, right, 3 years in prison, you're a criminal, sod off, kind of thing. So they demonstrated, and they actually referred to it as decision fatigue, but they demonstrated that the decisions got a lot worse as the day went on. And this is happening for your clients in terms of fat loss as well. First thing in the morning, they're fresh, they're awake. This is why nobody binge eats cookies and drinks alcohol first thing in the morning. If you do, you've got other problems. But that's the reason why they don't do it. They're fresh, they're rested, prefrontal cortex is everything's great. You're able to offset the instant gratification for the later gain. By the time lunchtime comes around, if you've had a busy day, a stressful day, you're feeling tired, you're thinking, oh, I'll just get a coffee. I'll just have a biscuit with my coffee. I'll just have some cookies. I'll have some crisps, whatever, whatever. And I noticed this in myself as well, which is why all of this stuff that we've talked about today matters hugely. Because now if you can just take away like 30% of that stuff that your clients are thinking about, or even yourself is thinking about, you know, having to worry about macros and low carb and, oh, you know, Joe Blow Guru said this and blah, 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 blah. Just, okay, stop thinking about it. It's not even relevant. It doesn't even matter. And that's not to say that macronutrient ratios don't matter at all. Because again, if you're a high performance athlete, it starts to matter. If you're in a clinical situation with digestive health, etc., it starts to matter. But for purely fat loss, weight loss purposes, it's completely irrelevant. Hopefully I've made that point. If not, you can drop me an email or otherwise get in touch. And that's all I've got for today. So hopefully that was useful. Hopefully that was interesting. Let me know what you think and I will catch you next time.
I'm Mike Sweeney. This is the Simplified Body Podcast.